Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Shift. This week's guest is Kenise Mowgli. We actually recorded this episode on November 9th, so ages ago now, but I had recorded a bunch within the same few weeks, and then of course I still am late with the episodes. This is just like typical me. I've no concept of time, especially then when I get busy. I'm just like, what fucking day is it? Or like, oh shit, I forgot to do that. So anyway, one day hopefully I'll have someone helping me with this and it'll be much smoother. Oh god, that'll be the dream. But yeah, so this episode, well, before I talk about this episode, I'll let you know that the Patreon has the other episodes up. I just still have to put up the one I recorded a few days ago with Daniel McKenna. That I'll go up on Patreon tonight or today, whenever I have time. And but I'm probably going to put his episode out earlier than the other ones, even though his was recorded late, but just because he's promoting his, well, I don't know if the right word is promoting, but we'd love to tell people about his marathon he's doing in Ireland. And you can do it anywhere all over the world because you'll have an app. But yeah, so I'll have to post that one earlier. And then we have an episode with Blair Dawson that I did just after we taped this one with Kenise. I say we, but it's just me. And then Carmen Legala was before that, so still have to put up her one as well. And I think that's it. So I have loads backlog, so I have to put them up. But if you want to see any early or watch the videos, it's all up on Patreon.com/shiftpodcast. If you haven't watched my special, the special is I'll Do It Myself on my YouTube. My YouTube is at Katie Bull Comic, but that's up there. And then on the Patreon, I put the Q&A from the end of the special up there as well. So that's only up on Patreon. So yeah, and then I have to do a solo episode still and put that up there. But this episode, like I said, we recorded a month ago, but Kenise talked about like giving up booze for health reasons. And so she doesn't drink at all. I was talking about like dating, not drinking, having sex, not drinking, and kind of like, yeah, like the kind of benefits and then just the like having to experience all of this without the sort of, you know, the way booze makes everything seem easier to do sometimes. So we chat about that. And she also chatted as well about mental health and like trying different medication and what kind of worked and her experience with that. And then at the very end, we talked about a little bit just at the end about Israel and Palestine. So if you're all politics out, that's just at the end of the episode. And we kind of just went on a little like, you know, what we hear and what people message us and what we think are kind of like the hypocrisies about it all. Yeah, that's at the end of the episode. And again, it was in the realm of November 9th. So that's when we recorded that, so not that anything's really changed, it's still the same, but that was the kind of messages and stuff we were receiving around that time. And so other than that, I think that's all. Well, I guess I should tell you is that obviously I'll be back in Dublin, and those I it says on the Eventbrite going fast. I don't know what that means. I mean, I guess I do. I mean, it probably means going fast, or maybe did it say low tickets? Well, anyway, I'll be in Dublin on the 29th, so get your tickets. And obviously, if you're there in October, it'll be similar set. It's the new hour I'm working on, but hopefully, you know, in the past 2 by the time I get there, it'll be 2 months. So hopefully, a lot of the jokes will have fixed or changed, or I'll have some new bits in there too. We'll see, like, fingers crossed. So so I hope you guys come out, and I hope you enjoy it, and it's at Crackden. And there's definitely some new bits that I didn't have in October that I already have for this, so it's exciting. So yeah, so we'll see. And obviously Leland will be doing a set as well, so he wasn't there in October, so that'd be great. And he has so many jokes about me, so I get to riff off that. And oh god, yeah, Jer Staunton, who we all love, is coming to the Dead Rabbit in January 9th, so he'll be headlining, and that's that Irish show that I run with the Dead Rabbit, and I just MC it. But we have a brilliant opener as well, Amama Sardar, so she'll be the opener for the night, and then he's gonna do he's gonna headline it. So and we're flying him in to do it, so it's a lot of fun. So if there's any, if you're in New York, or if you know anybody in New York who'd like that, to go to that gig. And the Dead Rabbit's just the best, like the cocktails, and honestly as well, like they have treated the comedians and us better than most long run comedy venues, you know. So it's really nice, it's really refreshing. And yeah, and then I don't know if this will go up in time, but I'll be at another comedy club that I love, New York Comedy Club Stamford. I love New York Comedy Club, but they also have a location in Stamford, and I'll be there tonight, but I don't think you'll hear this in time. And then where else will I don't know, actually, by the time another episode comes out, but I guess Dublin's the main one. And did anybody understand that, because that was like a different language. But I'll let you go, I'll let you listen to this episode, and I hope you enjoy. And make sure to follow Kenise. Also, if you do listen to this in time, Kenise is in Boston tonight running her hour. If you miss it, make sure to follow her and go see her comedy, because she's absolutely hilarious. And other than that, I love you all, really appreciate you listening, and sorry this was a fucking 6 minute intro. Okay, bye. For the Shift listeners, thank you guys so much for listening as usual. And this week's guest, we have Kenise Mobley.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, okay, you did.
Great. I'm always nervous because I always Irish names.
What would the Irish version of my last name be?
I have no idea. That's what I thought it would be.
Yeah, as like some people say Mobley, and I'm like, no, don't say it like that.
Yeah, that sounds like mafia.
Yeah, it's like, no,
that sounds
you.
Like Italian mafia, not Irish mafia.
I'm very square. I'm not mafia.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on the podcast. And I had asked you earlier if there was anything related to dating, mm-hmm. sex, relationships. And you had said a couple of things, but you were newly sober?
Yes.
And I actually think that's really interesting for the Irish listeners, because I'm going to generalize, and I would say majority Irish people would really struggle with going on first dates or having sex without booze. Like, we're a country that really relies heavily on a bit of lubrication.
I did as well. So some people are sober because they made a choice and they were like, I would like to be better. But I'm medically sober. Like, I had a stroke. I'm on all these stroke medications. So they're like, you absolutely cannot drink.
Yeah.
And I loved drinking. Like, I never had a rock bottom. I just had a nice time.
Yeah.
And now I can't do it. And so to go on dates now, it is really hard to be like, what do you like? And it's also like, oh, I could, when I'm drinking, I'm like, this is so interesting and I'm compelled and I must kiss this man. But when I'm sober, I'm like, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah. No, that's so funny. And you're so much more confident, and then you're so much like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like, rejection's fine, I'll go dance on a table afterwards. But sure. When you're sober, it's like you're able to calculate the consequence.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, another lonely number of days because this copywriter doesn't like me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. And how long have you been sober?
A year.
A year. And that's so interesting about it being like a medical condition, because I know some friends who were medically told not to drink and they still did.
And
afterwards.
They still drink. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to get some people not to drink when it's been like a big part of their.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the thing that like made me feel like an open person, because I was very shy. Sometimes people would say I wasn't shy because they were like, you're mean, so you're not shy. Like, you tell people off, but you don't talk to them socially. And I was like, okay, I could work on that. But I started drinking, and I was like, immediately, like, okay, I was blackout drunk at a grad school event, and I woke up, And I had apparently talked to the dean of students and gotten a job at the college and worked there for 2 years as like one of the student ambassadors and like starting comedy. It was drinking. And so now, yeah, it's like, what do you even do? And wait a sec. You guys have the desire to stay out? Like,
yeah.
I'm not into this enough. I'd love to go to sleep, actually. Yeah.
I feel like that too, because I stopped drinking as much, and I went off for a long time too. Mm-hmm. Mine was medical too, because I was on these like antibiotics for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I remember being out with a group of Irish people here and being like, yeah, no, I just can't drink because I'm on antibiotics. And I was on for like 6 months. It was like a crazy long time. Yeah,
that's a long time.
And then they were like, it was like they didn't believe me, you know, or like they were like offended that I was staying sober for the night. And this isn't all Irish, but it was definitely this group of people, because I remember like one of the guys was like, I don't know if he thought I was lying and he thought I was poor, but he like bought me a drink. And I was like, no, I definitely can't, you know, you buy me a Coke. I don't drink Coke, but you can buy me a ginger ale.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, it was a weird thing that I had to like defend the fact that I wasn't drinking.
Goodness.
Yeah. Ugh.
I can't imagine someone being like, oh, this must be a poor thing.
It
must be because you can't afford booze. But if you could, you would have some booze, right?
And that's only logical. Or sometimes I do feel it, and it's not all Irish people, but there is a pressure to drink around Irish sometimes, because it's a real drinking culture. It doesn't mean that we're all alcoholics, but we do love the booze.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, sometimes if you're the one not, there's like a suspicion. And I don't know if it's like, oh, you're judging me because I'm drinking, but it's like, you could still have a good time.
Yeah.
Or maybe as well, because when people get so drunk, they say dumb stuff. They don't want a sober person around.
Remembering it? Yeah. And I do remember, like, I was out with a friend and he was drinking and I wasn't. And he was chatting to someone who was like 15 years younger than him. But overall, I could remember everything.
Yeah.
And he is like, why are you bringing this up? Like, I was like, oh, no, I remember all the details about her and her excitement over her senior year in college. I remember. I was there. So, no, thank you.
She's talking about My Little Pony.
Well, she was talking about how she was so excited to go to something over the summer with her friends. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm in such a fundamentally different place in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for you, but you sound dumb to me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk to you some more.
It's also like, as well, it's not even an offense to them, but it's like nearly triggering, because you're like, oh, I remember when when I was like, you know, the world was on fire, but I was just like, woohoo,
yeah, it's all gonna work out, I'm gonna be the one to make it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, you grow over time, slowly you're broken of that.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, there's still some delusional old people that we know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Men in comedy, for sure.
Yeah.
But not all of them. But yeah,
some of them
drunk.
Are nice.
Yeah.
But some of them you're like, what?
Yeah.
That's your big plan. Okay, well.
Yeah. No, that's so funny. I feel too, with the sober thing, what you said about like not staying out late too, like, you do when you're not drinking on a night out and you're like, you do have the fun, but there is an element that where it gets to a certain point of the night that you're like, they've gone into a different reality.
Yes.
I don't belong in this. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-mm.
And bedtime does seem like a better.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard to navigate, especially as well when it is for you. You can't, for health reasons. Mm-hmm. It's good. You're sticking by it. Stick by it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so like, I'm on these pills. They're like, if you don't take these pills, your heart, you're going to die. Like, they didn't say it like that, but it feels like that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I'll take these pills. I'll do it. And yeah, I've been on dates. I don't go on dates as much also, but I've been on dates where it's like, that person's drinking, I'm not drinking. Then they ask about it and you've got to be like, oh, well, for health reasons, da 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 da. And they're like, oh, and you can just tell like a shift. And also just, yeah, I am. Every hookup I had before was with drinking.
So is this the first time you've hooked up sober? Have you gotten to hook up sober yet?
I mean, I've been in relationships and like hooked up with people sober that way. But like usually the first time is after a drink.
Yeah.
And yeah, to just be like, oh, I'm thinking completely about like the way my body looks, the way your body looks, the environment that we are in. Okay, is this house clean? Like, you're just thinking about a lot of different things.
I think too, like, you know, I think there's a lot coming out with people with like neurodiversity, like ADHD or like autism spectrum and stuff like that. And I make this claim that every Irish person is ADHD.
Okay.
Because I feel like we're just self-medicating as a country with booze.
Ooh.
And so I think that when you have sex for the first time without booze, or even after, like, I feel like there's something with booze that makes you so slippery and like, okay. But then when there's no booze, you're like aware, like, does he need to kiss my neck for five seconds? This is really irritating. Okay. You know, or like, why, we're not moving smoothly. We're not, and I feel more like rigid, and I feel more anal, not in a anal sexual way, but like in a, I'm aware of the lights. I'm aware of the noise. Yeah.
Yes. None of that has, like, it's almost like with booze, I act like, imagine like a switchboard for like DJing or something, and like the dials on certain things are turned down and the dial on sensation is turned up, but to have it all like where it naturally sits, you're like, oh shit,
I know,
I gotta really like you to be here, and that's new. Like,
yeah. And then as well for like women, you know, the way they say like sex hurts if your vagina is not like
wet
ready to go and like warmed up like an engine or whatever. So like if you're sober and things are starting to irritate you, and then you're still trying to go with it, but then, and then the sex gets a little painful because you're and then you're like, you can't. Whereas when you're drunk, you're just like a free flapping fish. It really helps.
I would like for there to be something that is not booze that has the effect of booze that makes it easier to date. I'm like, I went on a date. I was traveling last month. I was in Rome, and I went on a date. And man, it was sober in Rome, which also there, they're like, what?
Yeah. The 12-year-old has a glass of wine.
Yes, exactly. There were children and stuff. And so it's just like, oh, yeah. And so just being like, I don't actually like this person. Like, but when drinking, I would be like, I'm in Italy. I'm getting fucked. Like,
I mean, every guy I dated with a bit of booze or whatever, yeah, it was just this amazing, until then I hung out with him sober and I was like, did he always talk about Trump? What the fuck happened?
Yeah. Being able to realize and remember all of that.
Yeah.
But also, like, someone was asking, because I've dated a bit, but I'm like, I'm single, and most of the time I have been single, but they're like, oh, are there any of the people that you've dated in the past that you'd want to date again? Or do you feel like any of those people would have worked out for like a marriage or something? And I'm like, oh, absolutely not. Like, now, especially now that I'm sober, not a single one of them would I like to be in a long-term relationship with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great though. That's great that it worked, that you were able to have that kind of, so with moving forward, then you know that whoever you pick is going to be for a long term, because you're able to kind of cut out the bullshit quicker.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm less like, that's fine.
I just had a moment where I realized my mic is a little too low.
Yeah.
As you were saying that, I was like, oh my god, concentrate on listening, but why are my levels low?
Totally get it.
I literally need a producer. I find exactly, because something happened to me where I had to lower the booze just because it was one of those gray area. It's not technically gray area, but it was like, whatever, you know, where you put yourself in a, well, whatever, anyway, yeah, I'm like,
okay,
gonna victim blame myself. But no, it definitely was like, I just wanna, I don't think, maybe comedy is such a safe space for booze.
Yeah.
And that did help then going forward with like, I mean, I still date a lot of crazy guys, and I still went on and dated and had drinks, but like, just the remembering experiences too. Like, I don't want to be blackout drunk and not remember like the nice moments, or on a date, like you go on the second date and you're repeating stuff and they're like, oh, you already asked me about my childhood, and you're like, oh, could you just give me the cliff notes?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah,
did I seem excited about what you said or scared about what you said? Like, remind me, how did I react with the last time then? Okay, cool. Yeah.
So how do you find it now without drinking? And so like with everything you said already, but like to kind of give a time stamp on the date. So let's say like when the guy isn't great, but you're drinking, it kind of gets more fun as you drink. Mm-hmm. So you can stay longer.
I've felt that way so many times. Yeah. I used to go on like 6-hour first dates. Yeah. I don't recommend that at all. That's a bad, like 6 hours for a first date, unless it's someone who you want to spend the rest of your life. I'm like, what was I doing? We should have said goodbye. It was bad. But now it is like, well, I've got something to do later. So 2 hours, I'm in and out. If it lasts any longer than that, something's gone wrong. Okay, goodbye. Yeah.
I think that's a really important point. No, in our point, because it is a huge red flag when you kind of like end up spending the whole night. And you're like, we associate that with romance. But any guy that I've spent like, well, I mean, me and Leland did also stay out drinking all night, and that's like a rare thing. But also we didn't see each other intensely that first week.
Yeah. And didn't you know each other before?
We knew each other for like 4 years.
Yeah.
So sure. But guys, like first date that I met that hung out with me all night and took me for breakfast the next day, and we ended up spending like going for dinner, and it was like that, like, oh, this is what the movie's about. They were like 3 months down the line about to lock me in their basement. So do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's bad. Yeah, that's bad.
It's better to take your time and get to know. And then you just run out of things to talk about as well. You blew all your load in the first month.
There's nothing to say. Yeah. There's nothing.
So you will be like, okay, I've got things to do.
Mm-hmm. Unless I am moved to spend a long time with someone, like, I'm not saying it'll never happen. It just hasn't happened in the year since I haven't been drinking. But I do imagine there are people with whom I would have a lot in common and want to spend time with, like, continuously. But even then, I feel like part of me would be like, I'm having such a nice time with you.
Yeah.
I can't wait until we do this again versus let's get it all out right now.
Yeah, and have some patience. And less drinking in general, I think, makes you a more patient person. Because you're like, okay, yeah, I'll go home, I'll watch my show, I'll see them again. But I feel like when I'm drinking, there becomes an urge to drink more. So even if I went on a date, it wouldn't even be necessary just stay with them, but just like keep the crack going.
Yeah, it feels nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you haven't had sober sex with a first date since?
Not a first date, no.
Like, there hasn't been, like, someone since you've been, like, sober?
No. I mean, I've had sex with people, but it's, like, the second or third date.
Okay, yeah. So you get a little more... That's also better, too. I feel like that's so much safer. And I feel like for men, too, like, a lot of men will be like, oh, you know, like, the issue with consent and drinking and all of that stuff, and they're like, what if I get in trouble or whatever? And it's like, if you're all too drunk, just wait.
Yeah,
wait. You can wait till day two. Have great sex day two.
To me, I love the anticipation. Yeah. I love that feeling of I'm into this person, and I kind of want to see what they look like naked.
Yeah,
like, what is that like? Ooh. And like, it helps me to not... It's not healthy to, like, build up a person in your head unrealistically, but it does help me to, like, oh, I wonder what this person's up to, or this or that, because I'm excited to see them again. And I have found on sometimes when I had sex on the first date, it was like, oh, I'm never talking to this person again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm leaving their house at 4 a.m. I'm calling a cab. I don't even know if I can afford a cab. Right? Like, I'm thinking of one specific person, but it was like his dick smelled bad. And just, it was a night of drinking, and we went back to his place, and his dick smelled bad, and he was talking about how we were going to spend so much time together and all this. And I was like, I'm going to call a car. I'm sorry. I've got work in the morning. I've got to, like, just.
I mean, I have to say, I don't think I've ever had the experience of smelly dick. And I don't remember. I feel like that would be charred in your brain. But like, wash your dick in the...
Yeah, hit the foreskin. Pull it back. Clean around
there.
Oh,
yeah, the foreskin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you gotta wash the foreskin, lads.
Yeah.
Irish lads know that, but they have foreskin. Yeah. But I don't know, maybe like... just wash your... if you were out all day and you're sweaty... Just go and pop into the bathroom.
Yeah, just do a fresh shun up. Yeah.
Yeah.
A rinse off, a splash, a wipe down, something. But no, this was like, oh, you've been out all day.
So did you still have sex with him? Or?
We did have sex.
It's such a woman thing to be like, I don't want to tell you your dick is bad. So it smells bad. I'll have sex with fuck with you. Yeah. That'd be easier than have to deal with the crying or whatever. Yeah. The whatever's going to happen result of saying you have a smelly dick.
Yeah. And then maybe they'll yell something at you like, you smell. Like,
it could be dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like suddenly. So yeah, I was just like, this is a lesson to me, and I'm learning about myself and what I do and don't want. And I definitely don't want that I don't want.
No smelly dick. But yeah, did you blow him?
No. Right, I think I started to, and I was like, let's move to sex. Yeah. We're already here, but that can't be so close to my nose.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so funny.
You want it away, but then it's like, well, is that smell on my vagina? It's close. I mean, it was protected, but still, I'm like,
it was clothed.
Still, like, is the sweat? I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna make sure I'm not.
It's also like,
that.
Yeah, is the smell like, are you ill? You know, like when someone has a bad breath, it's a bad toot or bad belly. You're like, is there something going on here? I don't know. Anyway, is the dick trying to tell you he's ill?
Maybe.
He needs to go to the doctor.
That's a new test that doctors have to do. They're like, you go into the doctor's office and they just smell your dick. And they're like, yeah, you've got 3 months to live. I can tell.
And how do men react? Just because I had a friend say that she had men react badly when she would tell them. She has like one of those lifelong illnesses that she can live with, but it does affect her health. And they react very like strange. Do you find men
just
react
like,
weird?
Oh, suddenly it's like, oh, is it okay if I drink? And you're like, yeah, it's, you have a drink. If you get drunk, I'm not going to fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I may not fuck you anyway. I'm not fucking on the first date now, but I would love to want to fuck someone on the first date, but I just haven't wanted to. But being sober, I also know, like, it's sketchy if I, as a totally sober person, do sleep with a drunk person.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, it's better. Because even then, like, if they were like, oh, I was kind of planning to wait, even something as simple as that, you don't want to. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, just people need to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's useful to. I think of a lot of my dating stories from my 20s, and that was a big chunk of my stand-up, especially getting started, and just, like, awkward situations I've been in, and how many of those simply wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been drinking.
Yeah.
And so now it is like, oh, I'm just, yes, I'm losing out on some of that feeling that I genuinely like, but, man, some of the sketchy situations I've been in, the times I was, like, scared, like, a lot of those are not happening now, which is really nice.
Yeah, and as well, no fear, you know, like, we call a hangover the fear, so not even just fear of being assaulted, but because that could still happen anyway, but yeah. The fear the next morning when you wake up, like, feeling like, did I say the right thing, guilty, or I didn't want to have sex with him, I wanted to, you know, you're yeah, that must be really I found that when I cut out drinking as much, that I was like, oh, it's nice to not wake up just pure depression.
Yes, I really, really like, I mean, I have issues with depression anyway, and I sent you a message about that because it was like, I also started on antidepressants, and that has made me feel better about myself and my worth and all that. So in some of these instances, I wouldn't have slept with someone if I hadn't been drinking, but also I wouldn't have slept with this person if I had been feeling better about myself. Like, yeah. And to feel better about myself does make it like, oh, I don't need this. I don't need this at all.
It's so true. Cause, and I do want to talk about antidepressants cause I'm very curious about that, but I think the listeners will be as well. But, I think, the self-value, like, where it's like you could be kind of drinking, feeling low, and a guy could be like actively talking about how women are dirt,
yeah,
and then you sleep with him,
yeah,
and then you
I'll
feel
prove,
guilty the
I'll
next
show
day.
Him yeah, with yeah. My vagina I'll show
yeah,
him
yeah. And then when you kind of go to therapy, drink less, have a healthy relationship with your, like, life or booze or friends, and then you're like, oh no, I don't need to be like, and that's not even just with, like, men, like, friends who treat you bad. Or,
yeah.
Like, I just got asked to do a show with a comedian who I know is, he's also done some, like, really shady shit to me, and he's done some shady shit to other people. And I said to my boyfriend, I was like, oh, should this be, like, an empowering thing where I should do it because I don't need to not do shows because of him? And he was like, you don't need stage time. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to feel uncomfortable... And he goes, you could also say it. And I go, I don't want to say it to the show booker because I know that they're friends and I don't have the emotional strength right now to be even, like, in that sort of element of drama. And
yeah.
It's a boy. I've said it to, like, girls before, but I'm like, I'd rather just say I'm busy. And he was like, say you're busy. You've got that weekend. You're on the road.
Yeah.
Take the night out. You don't need to put yourself. And I was like, oh, this is so. And then I said no. And I didn't feel guilty about not doing a spa. And you're like, this is so much better to kind of value yourself and
yeah.
You don't have to be the people pleaser.
Not
yeah.
at all.
So I think that comes with, like, not drinking as much or therapy or healthy.
Yeah.
Just loving yourself.
Loving yourself is great. I'm in therapy as well. But yeah, I guess, yeah, this past year I've done the big three. I've stopped drinking. I'm on medication. I'm in therapy. And yeah, so many, I've gone on I don't go on tons of dates, but I go on dates. But so many times I'm like, oh, I think I used to operate from this position of, like, oh, I've got to convince them that I'm worthwhile. And that's like what I'm doing on this date. I'm showing them that I'm a useful person. And now it's like, do I like this person?
Yeah.
And having that, even though it's a small shift that apparently a lot of people have already made, it's so useful to me because it's like, oh, I don't actually like this person. And I don't want to see them naked.
Yeah.
And the thought of hanging out at that person's house, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. No, it's such good advice. I remember a friend saying I was seeing a guy and he was gorgeous and the sex was great and we'd have loads of sex. But my God, when he'd open his mouth, I'd be like, I can't even. He was just so narcissist and so self-involved. But she was like, one night we were all hanging out and she was like, would you be friends with this guy if there wasn't like sex involved? And I was like, oh no, never. And she was like,
that's probably an indication of
something. Probably should be dating him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like looking for something more from it.
Mm-hmm.
No. That's I think that's a really good, and I don't think most people have come to that. I think most people, I think as well, when you try to sell yourself on dates or to friends or like whatever, then, or yeah, I guess in dates, as if you're trying to be like this best version of yourself, and then, but then there's kind of a pressure too, and you're keeping it up, and you're like, no, like you should always think I'm amazing, and instead of being like, oh wait, are they giving that back? Are they treating me the same? Yeah,
man. Since doing that, it has been like, oh, you're not trying.
Yeah.
And that's probably an indication of how interested you are in this or how much work you would even put into a relationship. And I don't need someone who's going to like climb Mount Everest every time, but I do want someone who wants to be here. And in fact, your not wanting to be here makes me want to be here less.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to try to dazzle you or have sex with you to convince you that I'm worthwhile.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
Oh, no, exactly. And the kind of just talking about themselves, not asking you questions, like all of these things, like we're not, who is the time? Like, I do think a lot, I hope me and Leland are together forever, but if we did break up, I do think, God, I can't imagine having to go out on dates again. But I do think I'm in a better space that if I did, I'd be able to kind of cut off the bullshit very quickly. I feel like I wasted a lot of time listening to guys' problems or their life or their backstory.
Get a therapist. Like, it's so frustrating. I see my friends dating people like this, but also, yes, in my 20s, I did this. Just so many dudes who were like, oh, no, I don't need a therapist. I'll just burden a woman I know. And you're like, what?
I know. It's also like the problem with men like that, too. And men don't do it just to girls they go on dates with. They do it with their female friends.
Yes.
And it's like, unfortunately, when you're not a qualified therapist, so they come and burden you with their problems. And that's totally fine. I'm happy to listen. But it can't be like constant, and it can't be like, and then they expect you to be a therapist, but A, we're actually not qualified, and B, you only want to hear what you want to hear.
Exactly.
So sometimes when we're like, I definitely wouldn't treat that woman that way, and I think she's actually kind of in the right to be upset.
Yeah.
And then they're mad, like, well, we're friends and stuff, and it's like, I just listened to you 2 hours and actually my advice is you're being a dick.
Yes.
And I'm not a therapist. I'm not also qualified to explain the complexities of a woman's brain that I've never met.
Oh my gosh.
So stuff like that, and you're like, you're kind of putting us in a position where you're not going to be happy with the end. Whereas at least with a therapist, you can be like, oh well, they're qualified.
Yes.
And okay, you're like, I remember one time with like Leland, and I there was like something happened with his health, but I was like, I don't think you're gonna listen to me, but I think you should talk to the doctor. And the doctor, he comes back and he goes, oh yeah, it was everything I had said, and he was like then taking the doctor's advice, and I understand where he's coming from too, because I'm not, and that's why I was like, I need you to just go to the doctor.
Don't just keep saying this at me.
Exactly, because you're not gonna believe. Because you, it's easy for you to go, well, you're not a doctor.
Yeah. Well, then why'd you tell me?
No, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So antidepressants. I think Irish people are terrified of pills.
Yeah.
Big stigma against it, which I think the Gen Z will slowly but surely fix. Was it the first medication you took that worked?
No. So I've taken medication off and on, and I started with Celexa, and it felt like electric zaps in my brain. It was bad, and so I got off that very quickly because I was like, I'm tired all the time, and it feels like a TV that's going in and out of static, and I don't like this feeling at all. And then years later, I tried my doctor was like, I think also my doctor was a little bit of a pill pusher. She was like, you need to take both Wellbutrin and Lexapro. You'll take one in the morning, one at night, da 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 da. And I felt okay, but I got to the point where I felt so okay, I was like, I don't think I need this anymore. And then 2 years went by, and then I had like a really bad like depressive episode. And so I was like, okay, like I'm just crying on the floor. I'm not able to do my job. This isn't effective. And so now I'm on Lexapro. And the first week or so, you have to like, your body has to adjust to it. I was a bit tired. But after that, it's so much easier to do certain things because I kind of do the negative self-talk. And I also will spiral on an idea really, really easily. So it'll be like, that's not going to work out. And then all these ways that it's not going to work out. And then just goes down and you're not going to be good at this. And and it just goes down and down and down. But it's like the medication just is like a little ledge. That's like, hey, step off from the spiral, step onto this little ledge. You can see the spiral. You can see that's not going anywhere good. And then you can pull yourself back.
Wow.
And that's, I find it so helpful. Yeah. And it also helps with like my relationships because I don't just assume that everyone hates me or that somebody's mad at me and then act as though they're mad at me. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, where is this coming from? And so that for me, it's been so helpful. And for people that I care about, it's been so helpful. I'm not going to say everyone needs to take it. Although I will say it's not legal, but I do wish that I could drug my mother.
Yeah,
just
same.
Like slip it into her food. But
I wish I could have drugged her 20 years ago.
Yes. Like when she was raising me, I feel like she would have had such a better time if she had been on medication because she was my mom, single mom, just stressed out all the time. And I'm like, I wish to God you had had this, just the ability to step away from the spiral and take a breath and reassess where you are. But you were just on that spiral all the time. And so it is not legal. I will not drug my mom. I'm just putting that out there. I'm not going to do it. But I do think it could help a lot of people. And that if you're considering it, you can always try it and then get off it. If it doesn't work for you, you can always stop it. It's not like I went to and this is part of the process of learning and like seeing who you trust and all that. But I went to a psychiatrist for just like one appointment. And this guy is clearly a pill pusher because we'd only talked for 30 minutes and he was like, okay, this is my diagnosis of you. And this is my diagnosis based on what you said about your mom. So your mom probably has this disorder and you probably have this disorder. And here's gabapentin, which is like anti-seizure medication. And if you start taking it and then you stop taking it, it could permanently ruin your brain chemistry. And I was like, I don't think I should. We've talked for 30. I don't think that I should be jumping into this hardcore. And I'm not psychotic. And I don't have seizures. Like, I don't think I should be on this.
That's really scary. My friend had a similar experience here in New York with a psychiatrist. And I'm like, is this the same fucking psychiatrist?
It might be.
But same thing. 30 minutes. Diagnosed her. Said that because she had wrote something about a family member, she must have that also. But she was like, I 100% don't. I know the symptoms. This is not me. It's something different. And then she basically had to fight them on it. But then eventually she was like, I know that mine is whatever. I've done the research. And now, so basically she got the pills she needs.
Yes.
And it's something way more mild. And she's like having a great, like, kind of explaining like what you're explaining. But again, they were trying to prescribe like antipsychotics.
Yeah. And you're like, like,
she's like, I haven't seen any visions.
Yes. I'm not hearing voices. I'm not seeing visions. I'm not like, it isn't a situation where like I disappeared for 3 days and you found me walking naked down Central Avenue. Like it's not that serious. Like,
yeah.
And also if you are experiencing that symptom, please get help. But
There's like, I think it's like really important to like, cause like with my therapy, I don't do therapy anymore, but when I did, she would obviously say things that I don't agree with. And that doesn't mean I don't go to therapy anymore. It just goes, I can be selective and take what I know is useful for me.
Yes, exactly.
And so, yeah, I feel like with the pills, everything you're explaining and what you said, like, I laugh because I was like, there are so many people that I'm like, I think they need that. Because there's just so many times where someone was like, yeah, I know you were mad at me. And I'm like, we're having to step back and go, okay, wait, what?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, you actually didn't reply to my DM. And I'm like, Oh, I get like 20 DMs a day.
Yeah.
And I truly just forgot. It's not personal. You have my phone number. You could have called. But like, that's the thing where people make like things that personal, where you're like, those same people are people that are a little eggshelly or definitely, I know, have depression.
Yeah.
And I guess it's projection of insecurity or like the negative voice. And I do find like those type of people tend to like talk to me about that, because I'd be quite like, you know, positive, or they're like, how do you have such a positive attitude with comedy? And I'm like, I don't know, because I'll jump off a bridge if I don't. Like, it's not
fair.
I just don't let that. But I'm lucky that I don't have, and I've had depressive episodes, but like, it's never been over that sort of stuff. It was more over like childhood trauma stuff that I got to work out in therapy, and it's all good now.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, so with what you're saying, I'm like, oh, I do think that sounds like a really good help for a lot of people.
Especially, and like, I am a big proponent of like, yes, do therapy and these pills, but it is like, hey, if you are struggling, this helps you even get to a mindset where you can address that.
Yeah.
Because like, some of these people, like, no offense, and I've been in bad places too, but whatever. Some of these people, if you're so far gone, going to therapy, just therapy, isn't necessarily going to get you there, because you're not even in a mental space to take the information that they're giving you to be able to discuss it from a more neutral perspective. Like, you can't do any of that because you're so wrapped up, because you're on the spiral. And the medication, again, just lets you step off it. And you can be like, oh, I flipped out at my mom and I'd like to not do that. Versus, my mom's being such a bitch and all during therapy, I'm just going to freak out at my mom. Yeah.
That's such a good point. How does it, what does it do to your brain chemistry? Do you know?
I should know. I majored in psychology. Should know this stuff. I majored in psychology and still didn't see a therapist. I majored in psychology and still was like, I don't know if I need medication. But I absolutely do. I don't know what it does, but it works. In the same way that, like, I used to do, is it ecstasy or something else? That's bad that I would take drugs that my friends gave me, but I used to do those, and I don't know how they worked, but I was like, I'm high.
Yeah.
I would not call being on Lexapro being high.
I understand what you're saying, though, and I did read one set, because like with ecstasy, it's like a big jolt in dopamine.
Yes.
And so it's probably like
little, it has jolts. Your brain release like all of it at once, which is why the next day you just feel like,
I don't do drugs, because I'm afraid.
Molly,
but,
that's what I used to do. Not a lot, but at parties sometimes I would be doing Molly.
I do this all the time. Actually, a mama was so funny. She sent me a meme where the girl's like, I read a book, and it's a TikTok. I listen to podcasts, TikTok.
Yes.
But I do this all the time, right? Quote from TikTok. But there was this, I think he was a psychiatrist or psychologist. And I know that psychiatrist is the meds. Psychologist is like talk. Yeah.
Usually, yeah.
So I'm guessing he might have been a psychiatrist, but he said to women, be careful when someone prescribes you medication, because misdiagnosis in women happen a lot.
Yes.
If you're ADHD, a misdiagnosis in women in ADHD happens like constantly, because the way women act on ADHD is different than men.
Yeah.
Which is like so funny, because it's the same with, you know that disease that makes the ground shake wobbly? It begins with a V.
Vertigo.
That actually has different symptoms in women than it does men. Because my dad and my granddad have it, and I have it too.
Oh shit.
And yeah, it just comes like once every 4 years. It's very light, but they say, I remember being to the doctor and he was like, oh, symptoms are different in women, because I was like, I don't think it's vertigo, but yeah, like the main symptoms are real, but he was saying women are more likely to get like dizzy spells and stuff. But also, I don't know, back to
there are lots of gender differences, and also based on what is allowed is kind of a strong word, but like based on what's societally recognized, like if a lady is being distracted, it'll be like, oh, she's like, they won't necessarily think ADHD. They'll just be like, she needs to go over here, or like
PMS. They always think it's something. It's so frustrating. And like the guy was saying that with ADHD, if you prescribe an ADHD woman antidepressants, it can make them go into a more depression or something like that. I must find the TikTok and put it in the bio. I definitely saved it, because it was like, because I wanted to send it to a few friends, but it was like, there's something with ADHD that if you bring up the dopamine, it's not Because ours, if it's more that your front lobe, what's it called? Cortex?
Lobe, yeah, the lobe, frontal cortex, lobe, yeah.
It just shuts down.
Interesting.
So like when you were, if you have ADHD and you need to concentrate on a task, it shuts down. But if you have a deadline, you can like cram.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so, but there's something to do with if you think that you're depressed, it's a different medication you need, and it can hinder the I really wished I had properly learned.
You'll cite the TikTok,
but I was ADHD, it'll be useful. So
I think that it is interesting because a lot of people assume depression because a lot of people have depression, but sometimes it is bipolar, sometimes it is something else, and it's kind of like you do have to, unfortunately, take the time to like try this, see if it doesn't work, try something else. And some people, I think, would rather just be sad.
Yeah. Like,
but if you are willing to, if you want to not just be depressed, I think it is worth it to take the time to try out different. Like, I know Celexa doesn't work for me. I now take Lexapro, and it really, really helps.
Yeah. And as well, like, I'm just really looking at the symptoms of different conditions. And
yeah
trying to. And with Lexapro, I remember Maddie Smith had a joke about how she was on it, but it affects her sex drive.
Did oh, yeah, think? It does. Oh. It affects. It made it so much harder to come. And
I think that's just being happy anyway.
Yeah.
So my sex drive went real low the happier I got. You know, I used to be this horny little fuck, and I was
then
like,
you're like,
sad.
I like myself. I don't need it.
Yeah.
I, knowing that it was lowering my libido, and I didn't come for like 3 weeks at first, but I like laid in my bed and I like concentrated, like, no, damn it, you're gonna break the seal and you're gonna fucking come. So just like, you know what? With reps every day,
yeah.
I can come again. But I was like determined to do it. But I do notice that it's like it takes a second for me to get there, and a guy has to like, I actually have to be turned on by you. I can't just be somewhere else. So yeah.
Yeah, that's that. And then the same with booze. So you're going through that the multiple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if he suddenly does something in the middle, I'll be like, pause. Sorry, we got to reset the machinery here because. So yeah,
You said too in yours, coming to terms with who you were before those things. Do you mean like before taking the antidepressants and
before, while I was drinking, before taking the antidepressants, before going to therapy, and just like, I have slept over at a man's house that I didn't know and broken into tears in the middle of the night. I was living in Boston for a long time, and like through snowstorms, seen men that I shouldn't have gone to their homes, and then freaked out, or like assumed that because I liked this person so much, we were obviously going to have a future. And when they're like, no, just been like, what do you mean? So yeah, I've been sorry to those men, but also some of them were jerks. So like two monsters together doesn't mean one person's not a monster. It's two monsters together. But it's like, oh, wait. Yeah, man, you had some lapses in thinking with some of the things you were doing, some of the ways you were behaving. Yeah.
I mean, and I think it's one of those things where not to feel guilt about it and to be happy you're in a good place, because I dated probably the most unhinged men in New York City. I pursued actively a relationship.
Okay.
And I do, like, I have all these stories, and it's funny because they're all like constant stories, and people are like, but how did you, or you're like nice or whatever, and it's like, yeah, those are true, but I was used to crazy from my mother.
Yeah.
B, wanted to fix everybody. C, it was a trill. D, if those guys were crazy, I definitely pushed them over the edge. So, I mean, I found the most unhinged and then twisted the knife. And it doesn't mean that, it's just, you know, I just knew how to be in relationships that were toxic.
Yeah.
And, you know, at a certain point, my cousin, my dad were like, it was like an intervention. They were like, it's just the same pattern. You're dating your mother. Like, what is going on?
Ooh,
what do you want from this?
That's nice of your family to do.
Yeah. And just kind of being like, yeah, why am I like? Because it is a sort of a sense of attention, because all my conversations were about that for years. I don't know if it was like repeating patterns or whatever, but mm-hmm. I think it's harder to just be in a healthy relationship, be at peace, recognize that peace is better than that like psychotic, you know, passionate, will they hit me, will they kiss me?
Oh God.
Jesus. I know, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fair, but also fuck that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think I liked all of that. It was like dramatic. It was honestly, I should have played a sport for like 15 years. I would have gotten a lot. And I think comedy helped a lot because mm-hmm. comedy, and the more better I got at it, the more spots I got, the more adrenaline was getting filled. Mm-hmm. And I wonder as well, like I, you know, I'm only therapist diagnosed ADHD, but I do think, and I have a lot of coping mechanisms. I'm so much like in a better place than a lot of people who don't even realize maybe that that could be something they have.
Yeah.
But I wonder as well, like, yeah, I think this stage really helps with whatever adrenaline I need. So mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, just do a sport or like go to karaoke or do open mic.
Something, yeah. Because otherwise, if you are chasing that feeling from the people around yeah. you, then yeah, that does seem like it'll lead to some bad situations.
Yeah, and there was loads of times where like I knew like this wasn't a good situation to be in, or this isn't the right thing to say, or do you know what I mean? So like even though like they were toxic, there was something toxic about me wanting to date them and yeah. be in that. And yeah, yeah, so I get that.
Yeah, but hey, we can say that was a part of
the journey.
Yeah, it was a part of the journey, but I'm past that, and I'm happy that I'm past that. And you know what? Good for me for getting out of that negative pattern of behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. I say to Leland, I'm like, you don't know how much power I have and I don't use it. You know, I don't manipulate. I don't gaslight. I communicate. And we just joke about it. And I don't do that. And I think it's a decision. Like, you can go, I'm not going to get mad and I'm going to listen to what they're saying, and I'm not. Because it's so unfortunate when you like go to that place where you're like, well, how dare you? Oh, you think I'm ugly in a dress all the time or whatever. You yeah. said, like, whatever. Because now it's like they're afraid to bring up things in the future. And and they're afraid to say, this upset me when you did this, because they're afraid of how you'll react.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's better to just be like, okay, I'm gonna listen, take this on board. Even if this is annoying me for a second, just say, okay, I need some space to like process.
Yeah.
And that's work. It's easier to just go, fuck you.
Yes. But it's nice to like, and also with body, like part of that is like your body's reacting to it. Yeah. Like you're heightening, your heart's racing, like all that stuff. And the drugs, I will say, calm a lot of that down. But also getting used to like, sometimes around people, you will have an uncomfortable moment. But that moment is not the truth. That moment is not a reflection of every aspect of your relationship. That is a moment where you are feeling something. Take a second. Now that you've experienced it, okay, you can move to the, all right, there's some weight to what you're saying, and I love you, and so I will continue listening to you.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's so interesting, too, like for people to go to therapy, too, because you realize what are, like, what your childhood has affected. So, like, that, like, kids who grew up walking around eggshells or like with argumentative parents, they tend to think they're in trouble all the time.
Yes.
And so exactly what you said about like friends coming up and being like, and I think I relate to when someone's like, oh, I thought you're, because I'm like, oh, this is some sort of childhood trauma, because like I'm also like, I understood that feeling, but thankfully therapy made me realize, oh, not everybody is like your parent. Or,
yes.
Yeah. Or you're not in trouble. Or honestly, people don't even think about
yes
that thing you said, because they're thinking about their own life.
Yes.
And if they do, if they're a healthy person, they'll bring it up, and they'll bring it up in a, you know, when you said that and you get a chance to explain yourself.
Yes.
But yeah, if it's, yeah, if you're hanging around healthy. Yeah. So it's, I think that was like one of the best therapy lessons. You're not always in trouble.
Yes. I love my mom. She's great. I do wish I could drug her, because yeah. Yes, it was, oh, suddenly I did this thing, and therefore it is a referendum on me as a person. So like, I mean, your grades aren't that great, and you could have done better. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh God, now I can hear her say things like that. She doesn't say things, I'm not getting grades in anything, but she says things and it's like, I have to remember that you were raised by two people who were born in the 1910s who have dumb ideas. And there's like books on it, it's like inner child work, whatever. But being able to see my mom like, oh, in the same way that I'm still dealing with my childhood stuff,
yeah,
you're obviously still dealing with stuff from people who grew up before women had the right to vote, yeah, and who grew up black in the South, yeah, and uber Christian, and you're dealing with some crazy, and I love you so much.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that on though, but I love you so much.
I think that's it. Like every generation needs to like fix it. And that's like just looking at, like, it's different with my mother because she's like literally has a bunch of mental health issues that she's not going to fix. For the ones that aren't, it's like they haven't gotten the skills.
Yeah.
This, they went from hitting your kids to, oh, we can't hit them, so we'll actually emotionally abuse them.
Yeah.
And now our generation has to learn not to weaponize words.
Yes.
So that's our thing. Yeah. So I don't know what Gen Z's is. I don't know what we'll do to Gen Z. We'll, yeah, just throw milk on them, and they're to their kids, they'll be like, we won't throw milk,
yeah,
on our children.
We're putting a line in the sand. It stops with us. No, yeah, more milk throwing. I'm just hoping we continue to get better, but it is frustrating. Like, I feel like I'm advancing past where my mom, yeah, did emotionally in some ways, just because I've had the freedom to do so. Yeah. I'm hoping, I have a nephew who I love to death. I'm hoping that he gets the ability to advance past that. I love seeing people, generations, whatever, just like, hey, we're working to be better. Each successive generation isn't going to try to just weigh down this generation with shit from the past. But it's so frustrating to go to, honestly, other parts of the country and see people like, absolutely not. Weighing down our children is part of it. They can't be different. They can't express themselves. They have to do this. In fact, we're going to vote against their right to, yeah, be anything but what we tell them they should be. And you're like, oh, we're free over here. Like, not free 100%, but we're like a little bit freer, and you could be like yourself and learn what that is. And they're like, fuck that. No.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I thought when I heard that like a lot of white women in the States voted for Trump.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I think it's that they had to do this lifestyle. So instead of going like, I love my child, let them have a better life than I did.
Mm-hmm.
They're going, no, you got to experience the same shitty life. Oh, 'cause now I have to, if you get a better life, I got to realize that my life was, it could have been, yeah, it could have been different.
That people were making choices around me and that led to the shitty situations I found myself in. And I have to say, oh, even though the people that loved me, they also didn't know, and therefore my life was hard, and so I will pass that hardship on.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, ugh, ugh.
It's so interesting. Actually, that just made me think of something, because I'll keep this for the Patreon, but with everything that's going on in the news, like, you'd see some like Christians being very supportive of Israel, which I find very interesting, because they'll use this thing like, well, if you were gay in God, and it's like, I can't be gay where you live.
Yeah. Don't, oh, suddenly you care about, yeah, gay rights? What are you talking,
yeah,
about?
What are you talking about?
Is it great for gays in Israel? Like, what do you, shut up.
Yeah. Don't act like you're not just misread your own book and you actually want all Jewish people, yes, to go to Israel because you want, yes, them to die in this rapture. That is, you're literally not being Christian values.
Yes. Some of my family is Southern Republican black, but voted for Trump. And like a fair chunk of my family is like this. And they are all pro-Israel in this way that's like, why do you want the rapture to happen?
Like, it's just, yeah. And then it's like, what was the other thing? I keep getting these weird messages where it's like, I know that they must not have followed me before, mm-hmm, because they're calling me an American, and I'm like, wow, one little video would check.
Yeah.
would fact check that.
Listen.
Yeah.
Just like with the sound on, you'll get it. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of people who are being told talking points, because I'm getting a lot of the same messages, but a lot of it is America dropped nuclear bombs on Japan, and it's like, no one's saying that's okay. Actually,
yeah, we're against that.
There's a big movie on the regret of that. Yes. We all went and saw it. He was very, like, he felt very guilty. It was very much about how ambition and how he was, yes, like, oh shit, maybe I should have thought about that.
And about how, like, half of the people even at the time were like, this is bad. Yeah. And successive generations were all like, yeah, we'd like to not do that again. Can we end nuclear proliferation? Yeah. Can we have a better system of communication between countries? And it's these other half of people who were like, no, fuck that, but we don't like that. We're also against that.
It's such a, and it's frustrating too, because it's, well, I'll get these messages like, you support, and then they'll say like wild things, and I'll be like, Okay, I actively never said that.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so that South stuff really annoys, or that kind of like, it makes me feel crazy.
Yes.
It's like, you can't advocate for one, especially going, well, we love Israel, it's a democracy. And I'm like, okay, but you're actively voting against rights in your democracy.
Yes. Also, it's a democracy, but like, the person who's been in power has been in power like many times, and it's a increasingly right wing, like there's lots of issues that aren't making that a pure democracy. All the people there don't have rights. Okay, come on, stop.
And to say, oh, you know, like, well, the people who voted for Hamas need to be punished, and it's like, okay, well, then you're PM. He's the one who funded him.
Yeah.
He's the one who put him into power. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's multiple sources. And 70% of the population were under 13 when Hamas came in.
Yeah. So
like, and if we're going by that logic, then everybody who votes for Trump need to also pay for his crimes.
Yeah.
So if he goes, exactly. I know he's not going to prison, but he's no one should be held accountable for your government. And I keep thinking about like when the IRA, so I was 8 when the IRA, and it's hard because it's very easy for people to go, that's a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, what's happening there feels like IRA England on crack cocaine. Like,
okay.
It's, do you know what I mean? It's like it's all of our troubles folded into a month.
Yeah.
But still, like, the last bombs was Oma bombing, and I was 8 when that happened. Mm-hmm. And I only remember it via the news. I was in the South, so I was probably 3 hour drive away from where it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, could you imagine if England, an English soldier was walking down and saw 8-year-old me and shot me for the IRA?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that makes no
sense. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And it's like, you just feel like trying to empathize with people now. And they're like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. You're an anti-Semite.
What? whoa. That's because I don't want, truly, it's now a magnitude of, it's like one, like how many people died? They were like this is our 9/11, and so it's more than 10 to 1 as far as like how many Palestinians have died versus how many Israelis have died. And it's like, and you guys are like, no, this is fine, this is fine.
Leland's mom's friend messaged me, and she was like, basically like bringing up that her family had passed away in the Holocaust, which is obviously devastating. We've all learned that in history. That's why Palestinians are saying, but learn our history, because it's not mainstream.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then if you know the histories, you can see the pattern, you can see why this happens, you can see that it's not in a vacuum, and you can see that there is second class citizens, there's so much. And even when you learn the history, you don't automatically blame Jewish people who ran away from Europe. You go, oh, they came, this was set up because Zionism set up in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, they fled. And a lot of their accounts are, we came to ghost towns, but we were told these people just left. So like, when you do, you kind of go, okay, so you know what I mean? You don't, and the problem is people think if you learn the history, you're going to go, fuck this certain amount of these people, but you're not. You're able to go, okay, it's people in government, it's people in power, it's the Brits, it's the empowered Zionists telling them, brainwashing, all of this stuff.
Oof.
So it's really important, because then you understand why Palestinians have experienced so much, you know, the Nakba, the great catastrophe, and all of that stuff. To circle back, what was my point? I can't remember. His mom's best friend messaged me saying, my family died in the Holocaust. You need to understand that, like, we can't let another Holocaust happen. And I'm not happy with the government there, but they're doing, like, you know, whatever, something implying like that justifies what's happening now. I love your comedy, so leave your page to comedy, leave out politics, which is like, you don't get to dictate what I do in something I've built and grown. And sorry, I've been talking about, I've posted about Israel Palestine for years.
Yeah, you, isn't something new. You're not Jerry Seinfeld, and you're like, normally I talk about sheets and fitted sheets or something, but now it's this.
There is literally a video on my page from a year ago that I got a lot of trouble for. But anyway, to say that was so frustrating because it was like your message is opening with guilting.
Yeah.
There are people who are currently dying by the thousands more right now.
Yes.
To say leave out politics is like, you don't get to tell me.
No.
Yeah. So like that sort of stuff is like, it's because it's like, yeah, I have a platform and comedy is also about politics.
Yes, and, it is.
And yeah, and everything I've said hasn't been, I've always said, yeah, of course, that's awful what happened on October 7th. But also here's like a history podcast.
Yes.
Here's like a, because if you don't understand the, if you don't, you can't just dehumanize all the people. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for letting me vent that out.
No, I just, it is, I was abroad for like all of October, and so it was weird to just be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in a completely different place, but I'm seeing all this stuff go on, and like I can't be at these marches. And I tried to look up marches in Rome, but I'm like, I don't know where marches are. I don't even know where I am. But yeah, man, just to see all that and then have conversations with some people that were like, no, this is good, and you're like, you sound like a maniac.
Yeah, because the thing is, if we can't live in a society where, because then they're like, oh, well, you can't negotiate with terrorists, which is like a constant, like what I'm hearing now is people say repeat phrases or whatever. And it's like, try.
Yeah.
And just see, like, because you need to prioritize the safety of the hostages and the safety of the people. It's an occupied territory. They deserve to be safe, too. And even if you're saying, well, it's, you know, OK, if you're like, oh, well, Hamas is shooting a rocket from that hospital.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, why would you then level the, you know, they're running around.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know,
that's not going to get them.
It's, yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It's just all of it's like, take a break, figure out how to do it in the lens of, we are living in, we are a democracy.
Yeah.
There is an international law, there's humanitarian law, and figure it out, because it's like, then you're no better. You're like, you're no, what is
this? It was so frustrating. This is one thing that I saw a lot of. There's a speech by George W. Bush after this, and he's like, well, we got to get the terrorist, we got to do whatever it takes. And I was like, did you learn nothing?
Yeah.
You've said similar words, and you saw that, how that led to a 20-year conflict where we didn't get him.
Yeah.
Where in fact we destabilized an entire region. You learned nothing from that, and you're like, yep, commit genocide. What?
100%. And like the lies that I spread as well about like, it's like, it's so, oh, you don't have any friends who are Muslim.
Clearly.
You don't have any Palestinian friends, or you don't have any Arab friends. Because if you did, you would like, because like, they're also saying, I don't want any Jewish people killed. I don't want any of this. You know, I didn't want my dad to be a refugee. I didn't want, you know, we want peace. And you know, and to like, to even if you look at the Oslo agreement, they had actually kind of offered up a lot to look for this peace, that they were kind of nearly the losing side in that. So it's just like, if it's like really frustrating, because, you know, Kelly shared a great thing today about Kelly. What's her last name? Kelly. Oh, God. Kelly.
What color is her hair?
Jaffer's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly. Oh, yeah. Anyway, she's great.
We are friends. Why can't I think of her last name?
I know it's like an American name.
It is. She's from North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina.
But she shared today about how
Bachman,
right? So, yeah, it feels like very like,
yeah,
strong American. Yeah, I don't know, like something from a 1920s movie. They're like, are we going to get? How do you do that? Like a, what's that? What's that accent where it's
I'm so curious.
Yeah, you know the one where they're like that not trans accent. What's it called? Transylvania accent.
Transatlantic,
and they're like, hey, sugar, what's it? You know, like some like it hot. What's that accent?
When I think of a transatlantic accent, I think it's like
I'm really bad.
It's kind of
Marilyn Monroe,
British and mid-Atlantic. But oh, so the things and the things and the things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do they call women? Sweetie pie or something?
Sugar, sweetie pie.
This is like sugar. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I just saw some like at heart. Yes, yeah. thank you. So that's what it sounds like. It sounds like one of those guys who'd be like, oh, sugar with the cigarette and the hat. You know what I'm talking about? And he has a strong jaw.
Yeah, of course.
Mr. Blackman.
Yeah.
But she shared about the protest that like there's a lot of disinformation and like
so much. I saw some videos and also weird things that are like, it. I just. I noticed it more in one direction than another, probably. But I will say I saw one advertisement that was like a lady in a wheelchair and it's like, Hamas took this woman. Give money to Israel. Hamas is bad. I feel like this is fake. This feels pretty fake, but some people are like getting riled up by that.
I mean, we got eggs thrown us at a protest. And even at the point that we were there, they were saying ceasefire. They weren't singing the river to the sea, but also the river to the sea song has been explained by so many Palestinians, yes, saying it's not for genocide, it's about living freely,
yes,
amongst the land and not having to like have a visa or like, you know, get to. So, and a lot of people have even said that is a song that could even mean two-state. It's not saying,
yeah,
at all to kill, and the words don't even say that. So to misinterpret or like the spread,
willfully misinterpret.
Yeah, and so Kelly said that basically that like there's a lot of Jewish people who come and it's a call. It's not a, those songs aren't a call for genocide. It's to end genocide and for peace and the protests that have, and any protest, I've been to nearly all of them and they've been very peaceful. I've always left before the police come because I'm scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair.
When it gets too, like they'll pass down and be like, we're gonna barricade, so if you're okay with getting arrested, I'm like, no, I have a visa.
I'm good, yeah.
Well, I better let you go because we definitely went over time. But where can everybody follow you?
So everyone can follow me at Kenise Mobley on Instagram, on Twitter. I have a Facebook page. People like that, I guess. I have shows and they're on my website and you should check it out. When was this going to come out?
I'm thinking maybe next week because I have you, Carmen, and Mohamed. So I just have to check and see which one I'm going to put out first. But I think I'll put yours out next week first.
Okay, cool. Then, okay, if you are in the Boston area, please come to my one-person show at the Somerville Theater on December 8th, 7 p.m. The show is called Don't Kill Yourself Yet because, well, don't. So go see the show.
Okay, and love yous, and my special I think will be out by the time, so it's old at this point. It's just we've had it in the bank for so long. So make sure to check that on YouTube. It's on my YouTube at Katie Will Comic, and then my Don't Tell is out on Don't Tell, and then I'm probably going to be in Dublin doing a show, but we're going to be changing the dates because I'm not staying as long, so I'll figure that out and let you guys know, but it'll be all in my link tree in the bottom in the description, and Patreon video is up there /TheShiftPatreon. Love you all, bye.
Yay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.